that I have one man named Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is September 9, 2016, or it is Tishri 9, 2020. We're going to start our second service on this Sabbath, on this here preparation day for the double Sabbath, the Atonement, and the Seventh-day Sabbath, coming up here in a few hours. I'm going to start this with my theme song, Lead Me to the Rock That Is Higher Than I. Also Isaiah 61, verse 2. Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine, I'll forever be. Indebted to the sun of everyone who thinks he set me free. All the life and the soul I have to live is but a stepping stone. For the greater heights I have to attain is never done alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's higher than mine. Lead me to the place where the saints will sleep. Lead me to those mansions in the sky. A man on a mission came to this world, caught up on the slum. Born in a manger and scarcely a stranger, could be seen passing by. Though the moon shone bright with the heavenly lights of all the starry hosts, for the brightest one of them all is the one that marked the moon. Lead me to the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the fountain that's ever and dry. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to those mansions in the sky. For the star pointed to the newborn king as he lay in the manger's crypt. For he's a descendant of the one created from the Adam's rib. And the time rolled on, and the stories are told about the man of the Galilee. How he changed the water into the wine, made the blind to see. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's higher than mine. Lead me to the place of the treasure sea. He can lead me to the mountains in the sky. Don't leave me in the desert, barren and dry. Can't wish forever and let you die. Rather, lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me to the rock that's hard and nigh. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's hard and nigh. Lead me to the place of the stranger's feet. Lead me to those mansions in the sky. Final morning. We're going to title that for our service this afternoon. All right. Beecher Hollis wrote this track, Final Morning. It's entitled The Seven Trumpets. And he first published in 1935, 1940, and 1942, and is reprinted in 1953 while he was yet alive. He lived two more years after he printed this thing for the fourth time. It's called The Seven Trumpets. It coincides with the seven seals. You can't do can't have one without the other. And so, in the seventh trumpet, you have your final warning. When the trumpets sound, that's your final warning. Well, we have a trumpet sounding. The seventh trumpet is now sounding as a final warning for the spiritual house of Israel, the Seventh-day Adventist, and the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. The Davidian Seventh-day Adventists are of the house of Judah. The Seventh-day Adventists proper are the ten tribes house of Joseph, Ephraim, of the north. And that's the Seventh-day Adventist church proper. The Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, the shepherd rod, represents the house of David, tribe of Judah, lawgiver, with Benjamin. Benjamin and Judah are connected together. And Benjamin is of the house of Judah. The other ten tribes of the house of Ephraim come from Joseph and the north. Well, Ezekiel 37 connects these two together, these two houses together. As you know, it's ironic. They're connected together here in the 12th hour during probationary time, during the harvest time. But you have to resurrect the whole house of Israel mentioned there in Ezekiel 36 to fulfill that prophecy in Ezekiel 37 of the resurrection of the house of the Valley of Dry Bones. And you connect them all together with the spiritual living house of Israel today, and you have the whole house of Israel. Folks, the pot thickens and it gets deeper as we go along. But first we have to have this warning given to those who have the most light, who've been privileged to have the most light on present truth. And so that's who this warning is for in the house of Israel. Those who've had the most advanced truth and have accepted it and knows. This is only for those, if not for those that's rejected any truth along the way whatsoever. And it's for those that have known of the truth, had accepted the present truth at one time, and then now have turned back from it. It's also for them. Because we know there's many Adventists, many Davidians have never accepted present truth from what they were born on. So, whatever truth you was born on, that's fine. But if you haven't accepted any advancing light since the truth that you was born on, then you're in trouble. Okay, because it says there in Proverbs 4. It says in Proverbs 4:17, I believe. And it says, for the path of the just is as a shining light that shineth more and more into the perfect day. Now, the shining light that shines on your pathway every day is unfolding the present truth, the unfolding prophecy for those who are called to be leaders and to purify themselves and to get in a position where they can continue on to be leaders in the purified kingdom of heaven when they sit up here on earth in this 12th hour. And Proverbs 4:17 says, for or is it 4:18? It says, but the path of the just is as a shining light that shineth more and more until the perfect day. So it's only the present truth light only shines on the path of the just. Now, if you've been justified by His blood, and you have your name placed on the book of life for having accepted present truth when it came to you and walking in the light of it, and stayed on that path, well then this truth is for you. What I'm about to read to you now from Ezekiel 18 is a warning for those who have strayed off the path. And let's look at this here, Ezekiel 18, verse 1, the word of the Yahweh came unto me again, saying. Now what does it mean by that, again? Ezekiel had messages, Latter-day messages for the spiritual house of Israel, Seventh-day Adventists, and the Davidians for 18 chapters here. So now he's saying, but now after giving all those messages to present-day spiritual Israel, then he says, the word of Yahweh came unto me again, saying, what mean ye that he used this proverb concerning the land of Israel? 10. The fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge.
As I live, saith Yahweh Elohim, you shall not have occasion any more to use this proverb in Israel. Behold, all souls are mine as the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Now, the only way that you are classified as a soul of His is that you, number one, have been preordained from the foundation of the world to be one of these lively stones, as Peter talked about in the last days, that's built up unto a spiritual house, which Paul talks about in Ephesians chapter 2, to those Gentiles, that he says we are brethren, we are of the same house, built upon the foundation of Yahshua. And that's what Paul said in Ephesians chapter 2. Now, he said, but the soul that sinneth, it shall die. Okay. But if a man be just and do that which is lawful and right, now remember this word just. Your key word is just. If you've been justified by the blood, you go to Romans chapter 5 to see if you qualify to be justified by the blood, because he's talking to those Gentiles. If they come and join the house of Israel, then they have to come in through the blood of Yahshua, and they have to be justified by it. Says one, Romans 5, verse 1. Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with Yahweh through our Savior, Yahshua Messiah. Faith in what? Faith in His blood. Okay, so having settled that, whenever we see the word faith, and we see the word lawful and right, it says, and when we see the word just, anywhere we see the word just, it's talking about those that have accepted the blood of the everlasting covenant, both of the old and the new covenant. Okay. But if a man be just, and do that which is lawful and right, and hath not eaten upon the mountains, that's those false mountains of Babylon, talks about there in Revelation chapter 7, or chapter 2 and 3, talking about those seven churches with the seven candlesticks of Israel. Okay. In other words, those in our day would be represented by the Protestant churches that have come and gone, that were Gentiles, that were in charge of the seven candlesticks of the seven churches mentioned in Revelation 2 and 3. Okay. But because those churches have come and gone, because they each had a special doctrine that was given to them, a doctrine of Israel. But once they gave that doctrine, and then whenever they didn't advance with all the seven doctrines given to those seven churches, when the last church, Laodicea, that represented all seven churches, didn't advance with all seven doctrines given to be purified by it, then they were called mountains that had been eaten upon, one doctrine at a time through a period of time. And then it says, but if a man be just and do that which is lawful and right, and hath not eaten upon the mountains, and neither hath lifted up his eyes unto the idols of the house of Israel. And that's exactly what brought the downfall of Gilead Center, the last house of Israel that had the candlestick, the seventh candlestick, laid us here, that was in charge of it. And Brother Johnson proved that he had all seven doctrines with the Gilead Center. He proved that he had all of those, starting with Ephesus and Smyrna and Pergamos and Thyatira and Sardis and Philadelphia and that last Laodicea, the seventh one. Brother Johnson proved that he had, because each one of those churches was only given one doctrine, one grain of doctrine, those seven churches. And Brother Johnson accumulated all seven of them into his vessel. And that's where, but the thing is, he didn't get rid of the idols that each one of those seven churches had imbibed at one time while they were in existence. Brother Johnson didn't get rid of the idols that the Adventist Church that was represented by the seven candlestick letters here, he didn't get rid of them. And he wouldn't let go of them when he was shown what he was doing at the very end of his tenure, that he was practicing these idols, especially the birthday celebration and the anniversaries and other celebrations. He was told that this is idolatrous to Israel, and he wouldn't let go of it. So this is what he's talking about right here in Ezekiel 18, verse 6. And hath not eaten upon the mountains, neither hath lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel. Go read now in Ezekiel chapter 7 and 8 about that. Neither hath defiled his neighbor's wife, neither hath come near to a menstruous woman, and hath not oppressed any, but hath restored to the debtor his pledge, hath spoiled none by violence, hath given his head to the hungry, or his bread to the hungry, hath covered the naked with a garment. He that hath not given forth upon usury, neither hath taken any increase, hath withdrawn his hand from iniquity, hath executed true judgment between man and man, hath walked in my statutes, and hath kept my judgment to deal truly, he is just, he shall surely live, saith Yahweh Elohim. If he beget a son that is a robber, a shedder of blood, and that doeth the like to any one of these things, and that doeth not any of those duties, but even hath eaten upon the mountains and defiled his neighbor's wife, hath oppressed the poor and needy, hath spoiled by violence, hath not restored the pledge, and hath lifted up his eyes to the idols, hath committed abomination, hath given forth upon usury, and hath taken increase, shall he then live? He shall not live. He hath done all these abominations, he shall surely die. His blood shall be upon him. Now lo, if he begets his son that seeth all his father's sins, which he hath done and considereth, and doeth not such a life, hath not eaten up on the mountains, neither hath lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, hath not defiled his neighbor's wife, neither hath oppressed any, hath not withholden the pledge, neither hath spoiled by violence, but hath given his bread to the hungry, and hath covered the naked with a garment, that hath taken off his hand from the poor, that hath not received usury nor increase, hath executed my judgment, hath walked in my statutes, he shall not die for the iniquity of his father, he shall surely live. As for his father, because he cruelly oppressed, spoiled his brother by violence, and did that which is not good among his people, lo, even he shall die in his iniquity. Yet say ye, why doth not the son bear the iniquity of the father? When the son hath done that which is lawful and right, and hath kept all my statutes, and hath done them, he shall surely live. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Now this is two times that this is mentioned here in Ezekiel 18. Verse 4 says, behold, all souls are mine. As the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Alright? So it says in verse 20, the soul that sinneth, it shall die. The Son shall not bear the iniquity of the Father, neither shall the Father bear the iniquity of the Son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. But if the wicked will turn from all his sins that he hath committed, and keep all my statutes, and do that which is lawful and right, he shall surely live. He shall not die. So, as I'm giving this message at the very moment, this certainly fits someone that had at one time been a leader, a call to be a leader of in the house of Israel. And I think the people that hears this, the one that hears this, know who I'm talking about. All his transgressions that he hath committed, they shall not be mentioned unto him. In his righteousness that he hath done, he shall live. Have I any pleasure at all that the wicked should die, saith Yahweh Elohim, and not that he should return from his ways and live? So when the righteous turneth away from his righteousness, and committeth iniquity, and doeth according unto all the abominations that the wicked man doeth, shall he live? All his righteousness that he hath done shall not be mentioned, and his trespass that he hath trespassed, and in his sin that he hath sinned, and them shall he die. Yet ye say, the way of the Yahweh is not equal. Hear now, O house of Israel, is not my way equal? Are not your ways unequal? When a righteous man turneth away from his righteousness, and committed iniquity, and dieth in them, for his iniquity that he hath done shall he die. Now I want to point out something here. People that commit these things, that believe that they're righteous, but when they do these kind of things, they don't know that it's unrighteous what they're doing. Now I'm just going to tell you right now, Cyrus didn't have a clue what righteousness meant. He didn't have a clue. But in Isaiah 45:13, Yahweh says, I have raised him up in righteousness, and I will direct all his ways. He shall build my city, and he shall let go of my captives, not for price nor reward, saith Yahshua of hosts. Now, when Yahweh raises up his prophet in the last days, and that's antitypical Elijah, he says he's the one that's going to restore all things. So whoever comes with the generic name of the master prophet, Jezreel, like John the Baptist before him, 2,000 years ago, he will come in the spirit and the power of the Elijah. And it will be said of him that I have raised him up in righteousness. Now, Isaiah was one of those that came without a pedigree. He only came with the father's two names, Eliyahu. Nobody knew who he was by his birth name, if he indeed had one. Nobody knew where he came from, except he resided at Gilead, and that's where he appeared that day up on Mount Carmel. He was a man that came from Gilead. Okay? And so likewise, Yahweh raises up John the Baptist, for instance. John the Baptist was given that name as a camouflage from who he truly was. Because Yahshua told the disciples, when the Pharisees were making the point that they knew in prophecy that before Yahshua was to come and make his appearance, that there was to come first appear Elijah, and that is to restore all things. Now the Pharisees knew this from the prophecy, and he told the disciples this. And the disciples didn't know about this prophecy, apparently, because they came to Yahshua and they said, the Pharisees, they say that Elijah must first come, this Eliyahu, to restore all things. And then the Messiah will follow him. Yahshua said, well, I say to you that Elijah's already come, and they knew him not. And they did with him whatsoever they will. And then the disciples, they perceived that he was talking about John the Baptist. Of all things, John the Baptist had a camouflaged name, identity. So likewise, this antitypical Elijah that comes in Malachi 4, he's camouflaged as well. First, he has a generic master prophet's title of Jezreel, the oldest sibling of Hosea. Okay? And then he has another real name, antitypical David. And yet, this antitypical David, his name is camouflaged in the prophecies of Zechariah, for instance. Zechariah chapter 3 says, Joshua the son of Josedek will be this the prophet Viki Hala pointed out with inspiration, that this Joshua the son of Josedek is nothing but antitypical David and the spirit and power of the Elijah. And Ezekiel, lo and behold, calls him the Son of Man. And he also calls him David. Ezekiel calls him David there. I know in Ezekiel, Ezekiel 34. He calls him David, and in Ezekiel 37. He calls him Son of Man in one place. He calls him David in another place. And then you have John, the Baptist, John there in the book of John. He says that he's the porter. He says, and typically Elijah is the porter. He's a doorkeeper. He said, Yahshua is the door, and Elijah is the doorkeeper. Okay. And it just goes on and on and on and on. And there's other places where it talks about different characters. They end up being this antithetical David in the spirit and power of Elijah. So it says, thus saith the Yahweh, the laborer of Egypt. Notice, let's back up a little bit. It says, Isaiah 45, like I said, verse 13, talking about Cyrus of old. He says, and Cyrus was a heathen king, and he was prophesied about, Isaiah prophesied and saw him in vision 140 years before Cyrus was even born. At least 140 years. And Isaiah said, he wrote this about him, said, I have raised him up, this antipical Cyrus, in righteousness. That's your whole key. I have raised him up in righteousness. Now, even though you are a gross sinner, if Yahweh calls you out of the house of Israel to come and join a higher branch of Israel, he calls you to fill a certain position, he's called you in righteousness. Or he wouldn't call you at all. It says, by old man, present truth is your righteousness. You can go and back that up with Deuteronomy 6:24 and 25. You can go back that up right there with Deuteronomy chapter 6, 24 and 25. Now it says, I'm going to read it to you. It says, and he shall deliver their kings. Well, I thought I was on Deuteronomy 6:24 and 25. And it says, and the Yahweh commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Yahweh Elohim for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is at this day, and it shall be our righteousness to observe to do all these commandments before the Yahweh Elohim as he hath commanded us. Now, when he raised up Cyrus in righteousness, and Cyrus says, Yahweh has commanded me to direct and build and rebuilding his house at Jerusalem. He said, Yahweh of heaven has visited me and commanded me to build him a house at Jerusalem. And I can go read that to you in Isaiah 45. So Cyrus did everything that Yahweh commanded him to do, and Yahweh said, I had raised Cyrus up in righteousness, yet he was a heathen. He was a barbarian. But if you do everything that Yahweh commands you to do, I don't care if you're a Gentile, heathen, barbarian, I don't care who you are. If Yahweh has specially called you and give you a special commission to accomplish a work for him in prophecy, then he's raised you up in righteousness. Okay? So now, that's just that pure and simple. Alan DeLong, he always said to me one day when I first laid eyes on Alan DeLong, back in about 1981, he was sitting on a park bench across from the Adventist Church there at Keene, Texas, where he went to school. It was a Seventh-day Adventist college there. And Alan was in his last year of school there. And he was out there, and I just finished up having potluck dinner with the Adventists after their church service was over. And we thought we had a Bible study going with somebody there earlier, but lo and behold, they got warned about us, and they refused to go and have study with us. And as I was walking out the door with other guy that was with me, Andy Curry, he had joined us back just a little bit before Alan DeLong. And we stand out there on the front steps of that building and just walked out. And I looked across the street and I said to Andy Curry, I said, well, the day's not over. I said, you see that man sitting over on that bench? I said, let's go harvest him. He said, all right, let's go. So we went over there and we introduced ourselves to Alan and we harvested him. So that was my first contact with Alan DeLong. And Alan accepted the truth, so Yahweh raised Alan up in righteousness. Even though Alan had not known this truth before. Just like he said to Cyrus of old. He said, even though you have not known me, I have raised you up. And in righteousness. Even though Alan DeLong did not know the Father, or he didn't know this message at all. He said, but I'll raise you up in righteousness. And lo and behold, that held true because Alan went through many trials and tribulations the next 33 years that he was with me and Brother Johnson. He was with Brother Johnson for 20 of those years with me. And then he spent another 13 years with me, so to speak. And rounding out 33 years. And so Alan, he made every step. We come through a separation down at Trummet. Alan had married a woman that apparently she just was not of the same spirit. And they were together 15 years, and it proved out after 15 years that they were not of the same spirit. Alan had a love for the truth. He had a love for this creation calendar. He had a love for the prophecies. Alan had a love for it, and that's what held him. So whenever the separation came, he had to separate from his wife, divorce her, and he had to separate from the church, and he came with me. Because he believed that the Holy Spirit was working with me to continue on from Brother Johnson. So Alan continued on, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. He was raised up in righteousness, and he continued on. And Alan went through many trials and tribulations for the next 13 years with us. But nevertheless, he held on to the truth. And we prayed for each other, and I prayed for him, and went with him on a lot of trips together that time. And nevertheless, he finally, Alan had another test come along. It had to again be with a woman of controversial spirit. And Alan again, he fell prey to his second woman. And I have given him warning after warning after warning over this. And yet, Yahweh still got his hand on this man, Alan DeLong. He's very much needed in the kingdom for the talent that he has and what he's capable of doing. It's just unreal. This man has got such talent and ability to be a strong, strong, influential leader from here on in. But I'm preparing this message and I'm going to take it to him. And we're going to pray over it and ask Heavenly Father to impress him that what he's hearing is the truth and he needs to adhere to it. Okay? So I'm going to go back now to Ezekiel 18 where it says, verse 20, the soul that sinneth is shall die. The son shall not bear the iniquity of the father, and neither shall the father bear the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him. And the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. Okay. But if the wicked will turn from all his sins that he hath committed, and keep all my statutes, and do that which is lawful and right, he shall surely live, he shall not die. So, okay, the only way you become wicked is that you turn from the truth, and say, well, this is not it after all. Yahweh's not working with you no more. He's moved on with me. He's moved on with me, for instance. And he said, oh, he's moved on with my wife, this new woman that I've met of another race of people. That's a Gentile at the most. And so that's what we're dealing with right now. All his transgressions that he hath committed, they shall not be mentioned unto him. In his righteousness that he hath done, he shall live. Have I any pleasure at all that the wicked should die, saith Yahweh Elohim, and not that he should return from his ways and live? But when the righteous turneth away from his righteousness and committeth iniquity and doeth according unto all the abomination that the wicked man doeth, shall he live? All his righteousness that he hath done shall not be mentioned. In his trespass that he has trespassed, and in his sin that he has sinned, and them shall he die. Brother Johnson was raised up in righteousness in 1970. When he died in 2012, his sons buried him with a military funeral, because he had been in the military at one time. They never mentioned one word of Verlis Johnson's past history being a pastor. All those years at Gilead Center, they never mentioned one word about creation calendar or how he restored the whole complete sanctuary system. Not one word was mentioned at that funeral. So it didn't come out in the newspaper that Brother Johnson was a Davidian or a shepherd rod, that he joined the shepherd rod. When a word mentioned that he had joined the Seventh-day Adventists in 1939, that he joined the shepherd rod in 1946, that he had joined the Gilead Center and was the head of Gilead Center in 1970, nothing was mentioned about his long, many years of service. Can you imagine that? I mean, his, how many years is it from 1939 to 2000? That's 60 years. Brother Johnson had about 63 years of service in the kingdom of heaven. Sad to say that at the end it didn't turn out the way it could have turned out. But his sons did not mention one thing. But Brother Johnson continued on with his work clear up to the day he died. So it was to say 63 years, and then another 10 years, nearly 75 years Brother Johnson spent of his 90-some years of life. But he started when he was 21 years old. So Brother Johnson spent about 75 years working And the truth as it unfolded. And yet, when he died, his sons never made one word mention of that 75 years of his tenure as a preacher and as a colporter and a missionary and all the work that he had done. Nothing was mentioned. Why? Because he's turned from his righteousness. Because Brother Johnson had turned from his righteousness and did that which was evil. And it cost him. So I'm going to read that verse 24 to you again. It says, "But when the righteous turneth away from his righteousness and committeth iniquity and doeth according unto all the abominations that the wicked man doeth, shall he live? All his righteousness that he hath done shall not be mentioned in his trespass, that he hath trespassed, and in his sin that he hath sinned, in them shall he die. Yet you say, the way of the Yahweh is not equal. Hear now, O house of Israel, is not my way equal? Are not your ways unequal? When a righteous man turneth away from his righteousness and committeth iniquity and dieth in them for his iniquity that he hath done, shall he die? Again, when a wicked man turneth away from his wickedness that he hath committed and doeth that which is lawful and right, he shall save his soul alive." I give Brother Johnson his last warning, his final warning, July 14, 2002. He received his final warning. That's the name of our sermon, final warning. He rejected it. And the legacy proves out that was true. He died in his sin because he didn't heed the warning that I'd given to turn from his sins. I showed him what his sins were. "Because he considereth and turneth away from all his transgressions that he hath committed, he shall surely live. He shall not die. Yet saith the house of Israel, the way of the Yahweh is not equal. O house of Israel, are not my ways equal, are not your ways unequal? Therefore I will judge you, O house of Israel, every one according unto his ways, saith Yahweh Elohim. Repent and turn yourselves from all your transgressions, so iniquity shall not be your ruin. Cast away from you all your transgressions whereby you have transgressed, and make you a new heart and a new spirit. For why will you die, O house of Israel? For I have no pleasure in the death of him that dies, saith Yahweh Elohim. Wherefore turn yourselves and live you. Okay. Now, let's go to Ezra chapter 10. Start with verse 1. Now, when Ezra had prayed and when he had confessed weeping and casting himself down before the house of Yahweh, there assembled unto him out of the house a very great congregation of men and women. There assembled unto him out of Israel a very great congregation of men and women and children, for the people wept very sore. And Shechaniah, the son of Jahiel, one of the sons of Elam, answered and said unto Ezra, We have trespassed against our Elohim and have taken strange wives of the people of the land, yet now there is hope in Israel concerning this thing. Now how did this here Shechaniah, the son of Jahiel, how did he know? Because he had stood there in Nehemiah chapter 8 and 9, and he had listened to Ezra read the law that had been displaced for 70 years, that they were without, and while they were in Babylonian captivity, the children of Judah, the house of David. And so they had listened. They stood in on the grinder there, but for 6 hours, the midday, about 5 or 6 hours, and they stood and listened attentively to that law. And when they got through listening to it, there were certain ones that had broken that law flagrantly, ignorantly, because they had gone into Babylonian captivity and had taken strange wives of the Chaldeans, which was the Chaldeans are the descendants of Ishmael. They were Gentiles. They were Gentiles, descended of, they were Babylonians, Chaldean. They were descendants of Ishmael, Arabs, Muslims, half-brother to the Hebrews, and especially half-brothers to the house of David, Judah, the lawgiver. So you want to know how the Pharisees at the cross ended up a mixed multitude of people from the house of Esau and Ishmael? Right there you have it. Okay. So it says in Ezra 9, verse 2. Okay, and no, verse 3. Now therefore let us make a covenant with our Elohim to put away all the wives and such as are born of them according unto the counsel of my Yahweh, of my master, and of those that tremble at the commandment of our Elohim, and let it be done according unto the law. So, I'm telling my brother, Alan DeLong, actually, his identity is Obadiah. He's Elijah's helper. And I didn't give that to him by inspiration, and he can reject it if he wants to, but he's actually antitypical Obadiah. So, Alan, when you hear this message, go open up that book, Obadiah, and read it, because that's who you are, Alan DeLong. That's who you were called to be, antitypical Obadiah. So it says, verse 4, Ezra 10, Arise, for this matter belongeth unto thee. We also will be with thee. Be of good courage and do it. Then arose Ezra, and made the chief priests, the Levites, and all Israel to swear that they should do according unto this word, and they swear. And Ezra rose up from before the house of Yahweh. Ezra now is a high priest. He's a scribe. He's the seer. He's the interpreter of the law. And went into the chamber of Johanan, the son of Eliashib. And when he came thither, he did not eat no bread nor drink water, for he mourned because of the transgression of them that had been carried away. And they made proclamation, like this what was taking place is taking place at the, I believe, the Feast of Tabernacles, because they had come out of the Babylonian captivity at the Passover 6 months earlier. So now here they are, found the law, and when they got back to Jerusalem, they found the law of Moses hidden there, covered up in the temple. And they made proclamations throughout Judah and Jerusalem unto all the children of the captivity that they should give themselves together unto Jerusalem, and that whosoever would not come within 3 days according to the counsel of the princes and the elders, all his substance should be forfeited, and himself separated from the congregation of those that had been carried away. So, if the man couldn't heed the command to come up and to hear this urgent message, then he was not of the seed of the house of David, Judah. He's of the seed of Ishmael. Okay. Then all the men of Judah and Benjamin gathered themselves together unto Jerusalem within 3 days. It was the ninth month, on the 20th day of the month, and all the people sat in the street of the house of Yahweh, trembling because of this matter, and for the great rain. And Ezra the priest stood up and said unto them, you have transgressed and have taken strange wives to increase the trespass of Israel. So, Alan, you have risen up, and over the course since 1987, when you joined, you've been in the house of Israel, Gilead Center, about 6 years, and there you were. You had taken a strange wife. She was a heathen, and you taken her, and she vexed the house of Israel for 15 years. And I rose up at the end of that 15 years, and Yahweh told me to deal with her myself, or Brother Johnson wouldn't do it. So he told me to use Matthew 18 on her, and I did. And Alan was he was participant in those three letters that I delivered unto Amy DeLong, and Alan knows exactly what happened. That's what brought the church to its close. But when we finished dealing with Amy DeLong and she rejected my three messages that I sent to her to be reconciled unto me and unto the rest of the house of Israel, she rejected that. So Yahweh brought her to a close. And only because Alan stood up and agreed with me after that third meeting in the church, Brother Johnson called a meeting. He had Alan DeLong come with me to sit before him to be judged by Brother Johnson that I was wrong in those 3 steps that I'd issued against Amy. But I took over the meeting and I turned to Alan DeLong. I said, you are the witness now. And I said, I'm going to read that Matthew 18 to you and ask you, is this true? Is this true? Is this true? And everything that I read, Alan, you agreed with me that it was true. And when you did that, Brother Johnson, he got mad, slammed the Bible, and said this meeting never took place. And as soon as I read to him Matthew 18, where it says, Yahweh says, that what is bound on earth shall be bound in heaven. And I told Russ, I said, I bound this truth with you that Alan was my witness, that what I did with his wife, Amy DeLong, was true. Those 3 steps I issued against her was true. And you can't deny it. And as soon as, and I said, I bound this truth with you, Russ W. Johnson. I said, these are Yahweh's words. He put them in here for this reason. And I said, he will honor his word. This will come to pass, what has just taken place here today, what I have just told you. Alan was my witness. So where it says, where there's two or more witnesses, and the Holy Spirit was my third witness. So I had me, Alan, and the Holy Spirit. We all, and it says, where this is bound, and this truth is bound in heaven, where there's two or more witnesses agreed to it. And Alan, you was one of those that agreed to it. That's what separated you from Annie, because you made the right. If you had said, no, I don't agree to it, then you would have been with Annie to this very day, Alan. That's just that pure and simple. So I'm telling the truth, and you better take heed to it. So now, It says in Ezra 10:11. Now therefore, make confession unto the Yahweh Elohim of your father, and do his pleasure, and separate yourselves from the people of the land, and from the strange wives. Then all the congregation answered and said with a loud voice, as thou hast said, so must we do. And Alan DeLong, I want to also mention this. As soon as that meeting was over with Verlis that day, in Kermit, he couldn't wait to get over to your house, to your wife, and report to her, well, your husband agreed with Denton on this thing. That's what he told your wife. Well, your husband, I said, she said, Amy DeLong, your husband Alan agreed with Denton on this thing. He didn't stand with me. So, I didn't get the job done, in other words. The Denton Brunken got the victory. Or your husband sided in with him. Alan, you better be thankful that you did. You did the right thing. And that's what brought you down here to this area. Now, I'm warning you once again, this will be your last warning. Verse 13, Ezra 10:13. But the people are many, and it is a time of much rain, and we are not able to stand without. Now is this a work of one day or two, for we are many that have transgressed in this thing. Let now our rulers of all the congregation stand, and let all them which have taken strange wives in our cities come at appointed times, and with them the elders of every city and the judges thereof, until the fierce wrath of our Elohim, for this matter is turned from you. For this matter be turned from you. Only Jonathan the son of Ashiel and Jehoahaziah the son of Tikvah were employed about this matter, and Meshulam and Shabbatiah. Ezra 10:16, and the children of Israel, and the children of the captivity did so, and Ezra the priest, the certain chief of the fathers, asked the house of their fathers, and all of them by their names were separated, and sat down in the first day of the 10th month to examine the matter. And they made an end with all the men that had taken strange wives by the first day of the first month, and among the sons of the priests there were found that had taken strange wives, namely of the sons of Jeshua, the son of Josadak, and his brethren, and Messiah, and Eliezer, and Jerib, and Gedaliah, and they gave their hands that they would put away their wives, and being guilty, they offered a ram of the flock for their trespass. Okay, he says, those who had intermarriages, verse 20 of Ezra 10, he says, and the sons of Immer, Hananiah and Zebediah, and the sons of Haram, Messiah, and Elijah, Elijah, that's short for Eliyahu, the two parts of the father's name, and Shimei, and Jahiel, and Uzziah, and verse 22, and of the sons of Pashur, Eloneah, Messiah, Ishmael, Nethaneel, Josabad, and Elisha, also of the Levites, Josabad, and Shimei, and Kedaliah, the same is Kelita, Pethahiah, Judah, and Eliezer, of the singers also, Eliashib, and of the porters, Shalom, and Telem, and Uri. Moreover, of the Israel, of the sons of Perosh, Ramiah, and Josiah, and Melachi, and Mahim, and Eleazar, and Malchiah, and Benaniah, and of the sons of Elam, Mattaniah, and Zechariah, and Jahiel, and Abdi, and Jeremoth, and Elijah, and of the sons of Zatu, Elaniah, Elashib, Mattaniah, and Jeremoth, and Zabad, and Azizah, of the sons also of Bebiah, and it names all these sons, and it goes clear down to verse 44. I'm on verse 28. It just names all these sons that had to separate themselves from the strange wives. And it says in verse 44, all these had taken strange wives, and some of them had wives by whom they had children. So, likewise today, we've got the same thing. Now this is just the first call for Israel to come up and be counted. I'm talking about the true Judahite, the lawgiver, the house of David. This is a call for the house of David. This is not a call for the 144,000. This is a call for the house of David first. It's going to be 50,000 strong. That's going to go back to the house of David. That's going to be the always up front army that's going to start the rebuilding of that temple with the finances from the Gentiles, Donald Trump being our chief prince that's going to orchestrate, because he has a commission from Yahweh and a prophecy and an antipical position that he has to fulfill. Donald Trump, antipical Cyrus, is going to be the man that's going to be the brain on how to get this thing done. And believe you me, he's done proven himself over 40 years out in the public life of being a shaker and a maker and a deals maker and a good one at that. And he always seems like he comes out on top. Well, he's going to be that way again this time. Okay. So what have we learned? We have learned that we have come to the place where 2016 is the Jubilee year. Was the 49th year. Was the blood moon year. Okay. That was the sign before the Jubilee. The Jubilee is your 50th year. Okay. The Jubilee year also comes, comes in 2017, at the same time that the 70-year captivity of Judah ends as well. The reason I say that is because 1967, the Six-Day War, was a Jubilee year for Israel. They had a 50 years. The next Jubilee ends on a 7, which would be 2017. And 2017 is also the end of the 70-year captivity of antipical Judah that coincides with the Jubilee year. Both of them teach the deliverance of the house of Judah, not the 10 tribes, because they're still in captivity among the Assyrians. They're out there in all the nations of the world. They haven't yet been a prophecy opened up that is to bring them forth to join the two houses of Judah and Benjamin here in the south. But that prophecy is in Ezekiel chapter 20 to begin with, and Ezekiel 36 and 37, for the 12 tribes to be joined back together in these last days, together into one great kingdom, one great house of Yahweh. And when it happens, then you're going to have the fulfillment of Isaiah 2 and Micah 4, where it says, in the last days, many people... I'll go ahead and read it to you. Isaiah 2 and Micah 4 coincide together. They collaborate together. It says, verse 1 of Micah, Isaiah 2, the word that Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Remember, Jerusalem is the capital of Judah. And it's also the capital of the whole 12 tribes of Israel as well, once they're joined back together. But at the time of the fulfillment of this prophecy, it's only Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be established above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. That's when the 12 tribes are gathered together, 144,000 at Jerusalem. And they stand with the Lamb upon Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1. And many people shall go and say, come ye and let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh and unto the house of the Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his way, and we will walk in his path, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. Okay. That's what's and the mountain of the house of Yahweh is the house of David. Okay, and typical house of David, the lawgiver, and you have a prophecy. And Genesis 49:10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and that's Yahshua, the son, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. the gathering of the whole 12 tribes, and we gathered under this Shiloh at Jerusalem. Revelation 14:1 gives us that prophecy. Now, quickly we're going to turn to Micah 4 and bring this sermon to a close. Okay. It says, starting with verse 1, it says, but in the last days, now that's where we're at, the 12th parabolic hour is when the last days occur. And we've been in the 12th parabolic hour since 2002. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of Yahweh shall be established in the top of the mountains. Okay, now this mountain of the house of Yahweh is the house of David. You will get that prophecy starting with Daniel in Daniel 2:44-45. That's this little stone hewn out of the mountain, out of hand, that strikes the image on the feet, grows into a mountain and fills the whole earth. That's this mountain of the house of Yahweh that's been put in charge of the Elijah David, the one that's giving you this prophecy right now. And it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. And many nations, didn't say all nations, just said many nations, shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Yahweh, and unto the house of the Elohim of Jacob. You notice it says the mountain of Yahweh, and then unto the house. The house is the house of David. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Yeshua, the Son, from Jerusalem. This brings the close of our study. Our contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. We're marching to Zion. Come with that the law of the Yahweh has been known. Join in a song with a sweet accord. Join in a song with a sweet accord. And thus surround the throne. And thus surround the throne. We're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching up to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah. Let those refuse to sing who never knew our Yah, the children of the heavenly King, the children of the heavenly King. May speak their joys abroad, may speak their joys abroad. We're marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching up to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah. The hill of Zion yields a thousand sacred sweet. Before we reach the heavenly field, before we reach the heavenly field, or walk the golden streets, or walk the golden streets. We're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion, we're marching up to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah. Then let our songs abound and every tear be dry. We're marching to Emmanuel's ground. We're marching to Emmanuel's ground. To fair worlds on high, to fair worlds on high. We're marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching up to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah.